Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Government Operations and Veterans Affairs. We have a full agenda, which is what it's going to be like now for the rest of the session, and so we want to get through these as quickly as possible. And the first bill up is House File 2044, Representative Davids. And this, I'll move 2044, and you recommend it pass, and it goes to Jobs Finance Committee. And with that, Mr. Shepherd, you got to tell us why this bill is before us.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill was re-referred from the Policy Committee, and pretty much the entire policy of the bill is relevant to the jurisdiction of the Governmental Operations Committee, because the bill creates a new Explore Minnesota Tourism Office as a separate office from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and it transfers duties from that department. So throughout the bill, there are powers established for this new office.
Okay. And this goes to Jobs, but not State Gov Finance, correct?
Mr. Chairman, I believe we have not had a request from that committee.
Okay, he'll be back in the room in a momentarily.
And Mr. Chairman, that generally the deed department goes through Jobs Finance.
Okay, it goes there. All right. Welcome to our committee. Please explain why you're here. As much as we'd love to have you here, why don't you tell us why you're here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 2044 is a bill that creates a new tourism office, and it would be under the supervision of the Commissioner of Deed. I have with me today Mr. John Edmond, who is currently the head of that division right now. If I could, Mr. Chairman, what we'll be looking at mainly, of course, we can look at any part of the bill that the members want to talk about, but in government ops, we're basically looking at Section 10, setting up the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council and how that is set up. We did make some changes on it in the previous committee. Instead of two legislators, we went to four legislators, two from each house, and one being from each of the largest political parties. So each party would be represented that way. Before that, we just had two members, one from the House, one from the Senate, and most likely be the majority party. But we felt it was important to, on an issue such as tourism, to bring in both parties there. There is on page 9, if Mr. Shepherd explained to us that there's really no need on page 9 for lines 3 and 4. And before I go to the next committee, I'd just soon have that out of there. Maybe, Mr. Chairman, if Mr. Shepherd could explain why it's not needed.
Mr. Shepherd, on page 9, line 3 and 4, why should that be deleted?
Mr. Chair and members, I suggested to Representative Davids that language is duplicative. It provides that revenue under this section is governed by the next section of the bill, is what the reference is to.
Okay.
And part of it doesn't exist, and the next section pretty much already states what's in those two lines.
Okay, I'll move an oral amendment to remove lines 3 and 4 and page 9. Anybody got a problem with that? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, that's adopted. Now we got the bill in the order that you wanted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. What I'll do at this time, I know you've got a full schedule, so we'll pretty much try to stick to Section 10. But I would like Mr. Edmond from the department to make a few comments.
Hi, Mr. Edmond. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Edmond. I'm director of the Minnesota Office of Tourism. I'll be relatively brief, giving you just a quick overview of why this we're proposing this initiative here. Tourism, as you know, is a huge industry, $9 billion, 230 jobs throughout the state of Minnesota. It's comparable to agriculture. A lot has changed in the tourism industry over the last several years. Our resources, like many state agencies' resources, have decreased. We used to have about 70 FTEs. We have about 48 today. We're being outspent substantially by our competitors, Wisconsin, Missouri, Michigan, and Illinois. And then this last summer, our department merged, Department of Trade and Economic Development merged with Department of Employment, our Department of Economic Security, into a larger agency. So we became a part of a smaller agency with a much different mission. So we're looking at a new approach that allows us to better provide awareness for this industry and to leverage the investment that we have from the state. Mr. Chairman, as Representative Davis had mentioned, this bill creates a Minnesota Office of Tourism called Explore Minnesota Tourism. It leverages our state investment with increased private industry participation. It's important to mention that this is a revenue neutral bill. It basically transfers our existing budget over to this new entity. It doesn't result in any gain or any loss in state jobs. And the director of the Explore Minnesota Tourism Organization remains appointed by the governor as it is currently. We're doing this also because we heard from the Minnesota tourism industry. We had listening sessions all throughout the state who basically the industry said we need to do something different. We need a new approach to keep this industry strong and growing. And so we must focus on our efforts to promote the Explore Minnesota brand, that we need to have more involvement from the private sector. And that's what this approach basically accomplishes. Two other things I'll just briefly mention. There is a section in here regarding promotional authority, which is language that's been part of our department for decades. And we just transferred it. This is nothing new that we're proposing. We just transferred it to this bill. But we're working currently with the Department of Administration to clarify that, because as we looked at the old statutes, there is some ambiguity there. So we want to clarify that to make sure that we are still, for the majority of our expenses, using the competitive bidding process for state contracts, which we have been, but we just need to clarify that language. And the other thing I will mention is that there is a provision in this bill dealing with the ability to receive gifts or endowments. That's basically just seen as an additional tool for us to grow tourism. It's not meant to replace any of our current efforts. It establishes a nonprofit board, or allows us to establish a nonprofit board to oversee that. But we are actually working with Representative Davis and our authors in the Senate to basically clarify that existing state employees cannot be transferred to these nonprofits, because that is not the intent. It's just an intent. The gifts is an intent to give us additional tool to grow this industry.
Okay. Is there any questions, Representative Kahn?
I have a couple of ones. One, I noticed that the legislators are voting members.
Mr. Edmund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, that is correct.
I know we've gone back and forth on this in different commissions. Isn't there some constitutional problem of the merging of legislative and executive functions? And
Mr. Shepherd, do you have words on that?
What have we been doing most recently on this? I think the amateur.
Mr. Chairman, the council is advisory, I would assume.
Okay, it doesn't spend money on it.
They'd right. Probably like to, but they can't.
Well, it gives grants. It doesn't give the grants. It's just advisory to the...
Mr. Edmund?
It doesn't...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, that is correct. They're just advisory to help guide the Office of Tourism in developing marketing programs.
Okay. Then I guess... Then
yes, Representative Kahn.
The next issue is I'm trying to look through here. I'm looking at all of the groups that you're dealing with, and I don't see anything which has any connection with any of the Native American communities in this. And I happen to know, mainly from my husband's connection at the university, particularly with many international visits, actually that's one of their biggest interests in the state, is things related. And I don't see it anywhere in the bill. Am I just not looking appropriately, or shouldn't we, with all the different people that you're meeting with and so forth, shouldn't we put representatives from the tribes and so forth in there? Or just show me where it is if I'm missing it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, they're not specifically mentioned. We tried to be as general as we could and as inclusive as possible. There is the opportunity for several at-large positions which someone representing the tribes could fit into. So they're not specifically mentioned as a group, but we don't mention any group specifically. It's just representing statewide associations dealing with resorts, bed and breakfast, etc.
Well, Chairman, this director, for example, I'm looking on page 7.3. Director has the ability to enter into contracts and agreements with all kinds of people, and I don't see that including the representatives of the tribes.
Edmund?
Unless someone will point out to me how it
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it's not specifically mentioned. We currently.
Well, where is it even generally included? Just show me a phrase that would generally include it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, entering contracts with statewide tourism associations. We currently have an agreement with the Minnesota Indian Tourism Association. We're working with them in promoting Native American tourism. They're a recipient of grants, and they have participated in many of our programs. So we are currently doing that. I cannot, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, point to a specific phrase in here where it does say tribes.
I don't have an amendment right now, but I actually think that you ought to. Have you discussed this bill with the members of the, for example, the American Indian Tourism? Have you discussed this bill with them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, yes, we've had. That's why we had the statewide listening sessions. There's a copy of that report, I think, in your packet, where we went out to invite input from the entire Minnesota tourism community. The tribes have been included in some of those meetings.
Okay, and are they okay with the language in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, to this point, I have not heard any concerns with this bill.
Is there anything? I'm sorry, I just got this material before me. Is there anything? Where can I look to see where there was some input from the tribes in this material?
Mr. Edmund.
Any page or any?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I don't have the specific page numbers. I will get some documentation for you of that.
Is there anything?
There are some minutes of those various meetings that perhaps we could share with you.
But there's nothing in this general summary that says that the tribes are an important element of tourism.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, no, I don't believe so.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, to that point?
Yes, Representative Davis.
Representative Kahn, I think, brings up a good point, and I'd certainly be willing to work with Representative Kahn or any other member to see if we could, in with the department, to see if we could fashion some language to do that. I'm not adverse to that at all.
Oh, well, the question then becomes, can we wait till it gets to the next stop?
You know, just the interest that we have in casinos, and I just happen to know because of my meetings with European visitors, which I've never thought we've done a very good job of attracting, by the way, so I don't know if this movement will help it any, but one of their major interests has always been the American Indian population, and so it's not the first time I've been saying this. I don't think I've seen you before, so I haven't said it to you, but it just seems like it's just missing something, which is one of the big attractions that our state has, and it seems that we should not be working separately from, you know, if we have a state effort that's ignoring the American Indian tourism group because they're doing it, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. Chair,
we ought to have tours that are packeted, and you know, I'm not a big fan of casinos, but obviously that's a big. Positive for many tourists and in many states. And I just looking at this, I don't see it. I don't see any language that even looks as if we have them in this. And I admit I apologize because I haven't read it thoroughly. I've just skimmed it sitting here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I'd be glad to get you some information on how we have worked with tribes. And we did at the just recent annual tourism conference in January have a session about working better with tribes to promote Minnesota tourism, where we had representatives of Fortune Bay, I think Treasure Island, several CVBs talking about how we can work better with tribes to promote tourism. And we'd be glad to get you some of that information.
Okay,
Representative Lipman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two quick questions. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Edmund, if I understood your testimony correctly, most of House File 2044 is a recodification of items that were in other chapters into 116U. Are there elements in this bill that are new powers that weren't in the prior statute? Or one, do I have it correctly, and two, are there new powers?
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lipman, you're correct that most of it is transferring our existing statutes into this new bill. The things that are new, in fact, are the creation of the Tourism Council and the ability to receive gifts or endowments. Those are the two biggest changes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, either Representative Davids or Mr. Edmund, there obviously has been some controversy with in recent weeks with regards to lottery operations, which likewise has a strong director model. Has the legislative auditor's report or that discussion of issues animated any of the focus on a strong director model in with respect to tourism or this bill, and how is the experience with the lottery different from yours, and what have you learned from it, or if anything, or why shouldn't we be concerned about a strong director model with you?
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lipman, yes, we're very much aware of the situation with the lottery and how it impacts this. I think there's some significant differences. One is the creation of a strong tourism council, which I believe the lottery did not have, which would help oversee, and so that makes it significantly different. The other difference is with the director position appointed by the governor, that also gives oversight. In addition, we put in a provision in the bill that the day-to-day activities are overseen by the commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development in order to put in those systems of checks and balances that maybe weren't there in other situations.
Representative Filthy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, I'm looking at Section 14 about fees, and refers to rulemaking requirements that apparently are exempted in this bill. Could you, or maybe this is a question for Mr. Shepherd, but what is it that we're giving exemptions to here?
I defer to Mr. Shepherd, Representative Hilty, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chairman, members, the statutory references there, 16A.1283 is a requirement that fees generally be approved by the legislature before they take effect. 16A.1285 states a policy that fees generally recover the cost, no more, no less. And so both of these would not apply here. In general, fees in Minnesota are not set by rule anymore as a general practice. They're set. 3 years ago, the legislature passed a law requiring fees to be approved by the legislature, so they're generally not set in rule anyway. That's the reference to an exemption from rulemaking.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids or Mr. Edmund, could I ask then what's anticipated here? What is this activity that's going to be generating fees? It's not really, when you say fees for reports, publications, or related publicity, does that mean fees to actually generate the report, say, or does this mean fees for access to the report?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, basically I believe what this is referring to is the fact that we produce a variety of different promotional materials, such as our statewide travel guide, such as the Minnesota Explorer newspaper. These are produced through fees, through advertising fees to cover our costs. It's not fees that we charge to access public information. Most of the materials that are available, in fact, I can't think of anything that isn't available to the, it's basically to the consumer who wants information about travel in Minnesota. It's all available free.
Thank you.
Representative Silberg?
Mr. Chair, mine was on a similar vein, but is there a report to the legislature on the activities of this special account? In Section 15, it's deposited in a special revenue account and is appropriated to the director for the purpose of this chapter. So we're automatically appropriating it without us seeing it, and the money does not cancel and is available. How does the legislature even know what's happening in the account if we're exempting our appropriation?
Mr. Edmund?
Either yourself or the legal counsel.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair, members, there is no requirement for a report to the legislature, but this information would be tracked in the Department of Finance's biennial budget material, I think. This is, unlike the state lottery, this is not outside the state treasury. So I think that this all would show up in the budget books each year.
Mm. I'd like to right. say a little bit stronger word than I think.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can tell you that it is tracked and it's all available, and if you'd like, we'd be happy to share that information with
you. Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want it to be available if I'm interested in it. I'd like to have the reports come to the different legislative committees automatically, and if I'm assured of that, then that's fine.
And Mr. Chair, Representative, I might add that one of the reasons that we welcome this new approach is to allow us the opportunity to report to the legislature on our activities. As a small part of a large agency, last year, as an example, I believe we had one hearing in the House, we had none in the Senate. And so this gives us an opportunity to answer your questions, but also to tell our story about what we're doing to promote Minnesota. And so that, my hope is that this new structure will allow us to have more of this dialogue in the future.
Okay. President Thiessen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question about Section 4, which is changing the language mission. I think not of your area, but of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and changing it from a mission to create an economic environment that produces new jobs and the quality of existing jobs to a mission that supports the economic success of individuals, businesses, and communities. Is there a particular reason that we're kind of removing the focus off jobs and onto something else?
Yes. That's been debated quite heavily, and the department feels that the department itself actually doesn't create the jobs. They want to help foster an economic environment where jobs are created, but private businesses create the jobs. And so that's basically the reason that they took the jobs part out of there, because you know they want to do everything they can do to for the economic success of individuals, businesses, communities, and so on and so forth. But it's, they didn't really like the language that they're creating all these jobs.
If I just a quick follow-up, how are they kind of implementing that change? Is there any policy focus change that goes along with that mission change?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, maybe I should have someone from the department
that would be fine.
Explain that a little bit better. Mr. Rakowski here, or Lynn Batsley, or
he's here.
Here comes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Rakowski with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And Representative Thiessen, this mission statement you're referring to was the old Department of Trade and Economic Development mission statement. So the reason we scratched that and have a new mission statement is because we merged with the Department of Economic Security effective July 1st. And as you know, the Department of Economic Security was very employee assistance based. And so these words are trying to reflect the fact that we're working with both employers and employees. To your earlier point about tracking job creation, I think it also talks about non-resident in tourism statistics. We certainly, as part of our strategic plan, will continue to track our goals and objectives in a variety of job retention, job creation, tourism objectives, and things like that. And those will be part of the biennial budget process next year when you'll see those results.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll get back to you. Representative
Haas. Going back to what Representative Solberg was saying, you know, when I look through this thing and I see promotional expenses and revenues, gifts and grants, and there's discretion over and how to use those, nonprofit corporations that be established, I really think after the situation with the lottery that we started questioning a year ago, that we really do need some oversight in some reports to make sure that this doesn't go astray, and especially if we're accepting gifts and grants, that I think we should have an accounting of those gifts and those grants and to see how they're spent and where they go, because you know it's one person's decision, and I think we have to see results in you know in performance on the different promotional and advertising things we're doing. So I think we got to tighten this down a little bit to get some oversight by the legislature to look at, just to make sure we stay on track.
When it goes to Representative Gunther's committee, I assume Are they looking? They would have the oversight over the funds, correct, Representative Davis?
Mr. Chairman, to the comments by Representative Solberg and Representative Haas, I would have no problem developing some language that would say that the chairs of the committees that oversee these this new department would be, you know, given an annual financial statement or, you know, some language such as that.
To that point, Representative Solberg.
To that point, in talking with the Mark Tripp, the consul, that maybe another approach would be to have it in the report that Mr. Shepard, maybe you can help me, the fee schedule report. Now, it's a thick book that comes in, and none of us look at it, but our staff looks at it, the fiscal staff looks at it, and they can kind of see if there's some problems with it. It is a way of getting it to the legislature. A more effective way, of course, is in the budget books, but maybe that would give us a little bit of level of comfort as well.
I'd ask if we should have the Finance Committee, probably where that's their domain. I hate to do something.
Mr. Chairman, I feel comfortable with that too, but no, Representative Haas is on that Finance Committee. No, anybody?
No, not on that one. That's
is anybody on it here?
I am.
Oh, you're well. I don't know if I trust that.
Yeah. Not very reassuring, huh?
Can you come up with anybody else?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I have another question if we're done with that.
You're done, Representative Haas?
Yeah, I'm just listening to Representative Solberg right now.
Go ahead.
Then I'll comment.
Mr. Chairman, on page 9, where we're doing the transferring, and the effective date of this is July 1st of 2004, but there's two positions that we don't transfer over until 2005, on line 33. Communications and research are not permanently transferred until July 1st, 2005. Why would we wait a year to do those two positions?
Representative Davis or Mr. Edmund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, going back a little bit in the history of the Office of Tourism, functions used to be incorporated within the Office of Tourism for research, finance, human resources, etc. Those funds for those positions were taken out of our budget and transferred to then DTED and now DEED. So they're basically, it was taken out of our base budget, and so they're now providing us those services. The reason for the way it's written right now is that since we're in the middle of the biennium, we would work out an interagency agreement with the Department of Employment and Economic Development to continue to service us with those functions. But then the following fiscal year, those funds would be then transferred back into our base, as well as those two positions, so that there's no net gain or loss of any funds or any jobs. But basically, we would continue to do it by interagency agreement with the department during the next fiscal year, and then the following fiscal year have those individuals transferred over to our agency. And they're working on our behalf now anyway.
Mr. Chairman, it seems like it's a turf battle maybe, but I don't want to go down that way.
Okay. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Edmund, could you say a little bit more about Section 16? Like Representative Haas, I'm having some trouble with your being able to establish nonprofit corporations and charitable foundations, and also to receive gifts, grants, and endowments. So would you maybe help us understand why you've included these two sections and to what extent other states might already be doing this? And did you pattern it after some successful program some other place?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson. The reason that we put this in is to give us another tool to help grow tourism. Realizing that state budgets are what they are, we wanted to try some other mechanism in order to develop funds for different special purposes of tourism marketing. So that, as an example, if a major company or an individual wished to put some dollars to the state for tourism research or marketing, this gives us a place to park those dollars for that purpose, earn interest on them, and not get them tied up into the state system. It was recommended that we allow for the establishment of nonprofit or charitable corporations or foundations to oversee those funds, to make sure that they were used in the purposes that they were intended. There are some states, I can't specifically mention them now, that have used this, but there are other examples here in Minnesota where that technique has been used. The one that most comes to mind is the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission that uses nonprofits to, which maybe is not the best example to bring up based on that reaction.
Yeah, that's not done you any good there.
All right, let me try a different example, or let's say the Historical Society. But in any event, it was just simply, it was, maybe that's not a good example either.
Thanks for your help.
I better shut up now. The idea, Mr. Chairman, Representative, was simply to have an additional tool to help grow tourism.
That's good.
I should have stopped there.
Yeah, I should have stopped there. Okay. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davis, I hate to have this conversation keep coming back to the state lottery, but I'm looking on page 8 at the end of section 11. It says contracts made under this section are not subject to the provisions of Chapter 16C concerning competitive bidding. Isn't that kind of a problem we were just dealing with the state lottery? And isn't that how many of those problems arose? And why do we want to do that here?
Mr. Chairman, I'll defer to Mr. Edmund on that.
Mr. Edmund.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, for that very reason, that's why we've had some discussions with the Department of Administration to clarify. As I mentioned earlier, this is not the new language that we're proposing. Because it was written a while ago and because things have changed, there needs to be more clarification. I will tell you that the Office of Tourism has used the competitive bidding process for all of our major contracts, our advertising contracts, our contracts with our web, our contracts with our travel guides. This was intended, it's basically being used for those things. As an example, if you're doing a sales mission in another country, there's a hotel there, you don't have any other option of where you're going to hold this particular event. We use the promotional authority. It's less than 2% of our general fund budget that where we use this promotional authority. But because of the questions you raised, we do feel that there needs to be clarification, and we're working on an amendment to this bill to provide better clarification of that provision.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Edmund, is there any state in our 50 that outsources its tourism, that is, allows tourism to be run by a private enterprise?
Mr. Edmund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, there, of all of the other states, there is no state that is purely privatized. There is some state role for each and every state tourism office in the country. The state of Colorado a few years back eliminated their Office of Tourism. Their tourism industry suffered, and it has since been reinstated. There are some examples of public-private operations, like, example, Michigan or Florida. Florida has a Florida USA organization where they actually have they generate some revenues through car rental fees. They generate revenues from membership, etc. But there still is a state role. So there really is no example of any truly private. There are a few examples of innovative approaches, which I guess is what we're trying to do here, to leverage the approach where we feel that there needs to be a state investment in tourism. There needs to be oversight, but we want to basically leverage our resources better with more involvement from the private industry, and that's why this hybrid approach is being proposed.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Thiessen, you have a final question?
Yeah, I have a question about one of the repealers, the section that we, in current law, that the department can't operate or provide a travel reservation system in competition with private sector travel agents, and we're repealing that. What's the reason for that?
What page is that?
It's in the repeal. It's the repealer. It's, so it's in the appendix.
Oh, right here.
Are we planning on going into the travel reservation system business?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, we are not. That was something that was added years ago. I think it was recommended by staff that we take that out, to clean that up, to give us any options down the road, but that is not the intent. Our basic purpose is to promote that Explore Minnesota brand, to do it in our website, to try to attract non-resident and revenant travelers, and then we work with other industry associations that already have these systems set up and referring people to, whether it's a Hospitality Minnesota or Convention and Visitors Bureaus or other things, to actually book their trips. But that's not the role intended of the state.
Okay. See no other discussion. I'll renew my motion. House File 2044 be recommended to pass to the Jobs Finance Committee.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you're on your way. Representative Earhart. Well, I'll move House File 2210. And it goes to Transportation Finance, correct? Okay. Representative Earhart, I have a DE2 amendment. Is that the authors would like that put on?
Mr. Chairman, that is a delete all, yes.
Okay.
Actually, I have some oral amendments for that, but
okay. Well, let's why don't we get them and we do it all one time. Then why don't you give me the oral amendments? Everybody has the copy of the DE2.
No.
Okay,
no.
It's coming out.
Why do you know?
We'll just wait till it gets out, and then you can. I think we'll put the oral amendments on it, and then we'll put the whole thing together. Is that all right? So we got a new bill summary too then. Okay. What are your oral changes to the DE2?
Mr. Chairman, on page 2, line 25, strike vehicle mileage and insert road usage.
Okay.
Page 2, line 25.
And the other ones?
The other one is page 3, line 8, strike, hold public hearings and. So that sentence should read, the task force shall review available literature and other research as part of its study, and add the sentence, task force meetings shall be open to the public. Task force meetings shall be open to the public.
Sounds like the same thing.
Well, it's not quite, Mr. Chairman. And then there are two date changes. On line 10, that should be January 15th, 2007. And on line 16, July 1st, 2004 expires December. No, it's line 17. Expires 31-2006. 2006.
So we're changing the 8 to a 6. Okay, and this is on the delete all amendment. I'll move it with those changes noted. Put the. Yes, Representative Kahn.
I guess I'd like some explanation of what the effect of changing vehicle mileage for road usage is. And what. How do you measure road usage if it's not vehicle mileage?
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, that was upon the assistance of the, as we put this bill together, of the trucking industry.
What?
Well, there are other things besides just the mileage itself, Representative Kahn, Mr. Chairman, such as the weight of a vehicle, which might come into play.
So this
well,
would encompass.
Well,
go ahead.
Road usage, including vehicle mileage and vehicle weight, or something like that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we don't want to overcharge you when you're out there with your bike, but we want to make sure that you get a fair hearing on it.
Okay. On the, any other comments on the amendment? If not, we get the or the bill in order that the author would like, all in favor of the DE2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Amendments adopted. Now we have the bill before us. Let's go ahead and explain what we're doing here.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, we are looking at in the present system of funding our highways, bridges, and out of the highway user fund with the potential in the not too distant future, 5 to 10 years, probably a diminishing amount of money, revenues flowing from the gas tax, because we have a couple things coming online, the improved mileage of the hybrids, improved mileage of the regular cars. We have alternative fuels such as hydrogen that maybe within 10 years will be on the road. And then last but not least, we have a finite supply of petroleum products, at least we expect they're finite. And so I've even heard the governor mention that he wonders if the gas tax is a viable source of funding for our roads and bridges in the future. I expect that in the near term, 5 to 10 years, it's going to be, but we must look beyond that in order to continue a steady supply of funding, dedicated funding to our roads and bridges, our transit system. And so this task force is its purpose is to study the future of highway funding and alternatives to existing highway user tax mechanisms, which now, you know, are gas and license tax. And there are a number of studies that have been done not within the state and nationally that are part of what this task force would be looking at. We're not expecting them to do a lot of basic research, but pull together whatever exists and whatever comes online as our technology advances here, and try and make some decisions about what the best way for highway and bridges to be funded. And we've created then a task force which has several elements: the Commissioner of Transportation, or designee, Commissioner of Public Safety, or designee, Commissioner of Revenue, because it involves taxes, 6 members appointed by the governor, and you can read those on the summary of what they are, county board members, a member, elected city official, elected township, 3 members of the Senate, and 3 members of the House. And that to include, on the suggestion of Representative Kelleher, a minority member. So we included that in the latest change. And this would generally follow the rules of how a task force operates, select its own chair. Compensation would be for the non-government members, as for other state advisory boards, and the directs the Department of Transportation to provide staff, administrative support, and funding, which again, that's why it's going to transportation funding. And the directions for the task force is listed there. And that's about it, and I would like to, that's the structure of it.
All right, we have a question, Representative Solberg.
Just a question, is it standard for us to say in a task force that non-governmental members of the task force are compensated, but members are of the government are not?
Mr. Shepherd?
Per diems?
Mr. Chair and members, in general, in the statute that's referenced there, section 15.059, people who are government employees don't receive compensation if they are doing this during working hours or in their working capacity. So this is, I think the result is customary. I'm not sure the language is exactly the way it's always phrased, but I think you get to the same place.
But Mr. Chairman, I would question, like a county board member, would that be a government employee or government official? Mm-hmm. And would they then not be eligible for reimbursement of their expenses?
Mr. Shepard.
Could be used in non-governmental members?
Mr. Chair and members, the statute that governs advisory councils and committees, let me just check this. Provides that members who are state employees or employees of political subdivisions don't receive the daily compensation. I'm not certain about elected officials under that. Right offhand, let me think about it for a minute, if I could. In general, I should also point out that members of task forces don't usually receive per diem, and these would. So this is a little bit different in that respect too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I served on a task force for the Supreme Court and received the expenses from them a couple of years ago. I don't know.
Therefore, if you were a county board member, you would be at the same thing. That's what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I would like to ask some clarification. If you're going to ask a county board member to, which are part-time, unless you happen to be in the metropolitan area, I want to have some fairness to have some right. people from rural Minnesota on this task force. And if they do that, they at least should have a per diem in expenses.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, whatever the intent of the committee is, I can write something that would clarify that, if you'd like.
Or if it goes to transportation finance, should you want to have it done there?
I don't get a chance to talk on that one.
No, you don't.
But I don't know how the rest of the members of the field, but it seems to me that if you got a task force, that those elected officials, we should clarify that.
Representative Kahn, to that point?
I think what we're trying to avoid when we do this is something that we came up. I think there was some Hennepin County
right.
commissioners yeah. who were, I hate to blame my county, and I don't know if it was anywhere, who were getting a full salary and also having expenses paid, who then essentially double dipped because
right. yeah.
they would then, on as part of their working day when they're already being paid, yeah. they would then go and pick up per diem. And I think we don't want that. Whatever language we want is that if you're already being paid and it's part of your job to do this, you shouldn't get anything else. But, you know, if you're not, you certainly should have your expenses then probably for being paid too.
But, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what compensation, if that's just per diem or if it's expenses, that there may be a difference as well.
Do you have a comment on Representative Eric? Nope. Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, members, just two comments. I mean, first of all, there's a policy decision. You can decide if you want these members in general to receive per diem or if you only want them to be reimbursed for expenses. And secondly, if you want to put everybody on an equal footing and just refer to the general law, you could delete the word non-government on page 2, line 16. And then whatever you decide, the members would all be subject to just the general law governing compensation, which is that you don't get it if it's in your normal work duties.
Want to move that amendment?
I would move that.
Everybody understand the amendment? Representative Verhart, you're okay with the amendment?
Yeah, I repeat the reference.
Mr. Shepard, do you want to give us the line and all that?
Mr. Chair and members, it would be on page 2, line 16, delete the word non-government. The result would be that members of the task force would receive per diem, whether they're government or not, but that government employees wouldn't get it if the duties occurred during their normal work day, for which they're already compensated.
On the amendment, no other discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Amendment's adopted. Anybody in the audience who would like to speak? One second. Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the bill?
Over here.
Okay. Representative Kahn?
Is there any reason if we haven't been giving per diem to task forces that this task force is getting per diem?
Mr. Chairman, I can't hear you. Pull your mic down, please. And
you got to repeat it in the microphone. He couldn't hear.
I'm sorry. Since it's general policy that task forces don't get per diem, why is this particular task force getting per diem?
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Conn, I didn't know that anybody on here was except the civilian members who are not being paid by other government salaries.
But, you know, again, the question is that we give them expenses, but I don't think we've given them per diem, at least recently. And why do they need to get per diem for this task force?
Well, go ahead. Because we wanted them to get less than the Senate was getting. I don't know. Representative Conn, would you like to would you like to make a...
No, I wanted to just ask transportation. I assume, is this getting paid for from the Trunk Highway Fund or from the general? Well, how are the expenses of this being paid?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Conn, that's to be decided in Transportation Finance.
Okay, well, then they can
That's why we're sending it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. On the bill.
Well, we have
a discussion. If there's no other discussion, I'll renew the motion that House File Number 2210 be recommended to pass as amendment to Transportation Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And it moves on, it passes, and you're now in Transportation Finance to deal with all these issues. Thank you for coming down. You did such a great job, we didn't need your help. Okay, next bill on the agenda is House File Number 1681, Representative Bradley. And this one has to go to State Government Finance. And does somebody want to move this bill? Don't all speak up at once. All right, I'll move. I'm sorry. Representative Lippman moves House File 1681 State Government Finance. Mr. Shepard, why is this bill before us? This is a re-referral. I know that.
Mr. Chair, members, the reason that this bill was required to be re-referred is in Article 6, Section 8, which transfers regulatory duties over HMOs and certain other health-related organizations from the Health Department to the Commerce Department. That's on... page 23 of the bill. There also is some effect on the Department of Employee Relations in Article 1, Section 1.
Representative Bradley, welcome to our committee. Do you want to just explain those provisions to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'd be happy to do that. Let me begin with the section that I think was clearly reassigned here, and that's the page 23, change of the Health Maintenance Organization Regulation Authority. I think for members who've been around, I believe you are aware this proposal has been made in past sessions. In the past, it turned out to be kind of a financial impact that was going to increase expenses. This time, I think, having been re-examined, there are no net increases in expense for this section. There's no controversy on the parts of either the Health Department or the Department of Commerce. It makes a lot of sense. I think the every place that I've heard has been very supportive of consolidation. Today, we have most of health plan regulation in the Department of Commerce and a little bit in the Department of Health, where I think it would be fair to say the Department of Health is really not prepared actuarially, financially to analyze those sides. So, Mr. Chair, I think we have a fairly clean, non-controversial. There's been no controversy along the way in that section. And it depends on whether you want me, if you want me to comment on the doer instruction, I'd be happy to do that.
Is that the other section that Mr. Shepard referred to?
Mr. Chair, yes, that was what was mentioned.
Be my guest. Go ahead.
Okay. If you turn back to the page one of the bill, for members that want to refer to the bill, on section one, subdivision four, we are asking for what might say is kind of a soft. We've worked with the Department of Employee Relations on this to make sure that it doesn't violate any PELRA rules or contract negotiations. The only thing that's being asked for in this section is that DOER bring to the table for negotiations an option that would include health savings accounts. That doesn't mean that they would necessarily exit from those. That would be up to the labor negotiations, but at least to come in with an option for that, and that's all this section would do.
Okay. Any questions for members?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Silver.
Is there anything in state law now that would preclude the department from doing that now?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members, no, I don't think it's precluded by current law.
Mr. Chairman, I view this then as the legislature directing the administration how to negotiate. And I think
our role is to not negotiate. Our role is to ratify after negotiations, and that's a good separation of power. So I would move that we do away with subdivision 4.
Subdivision, which subdivision?
Well, page 1.
Oh,
I guess
section 1?
Section 1, yes, and me number accordingly.
Representative Bradley.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I would hope that you would not accept that amendment. I've worked this out with the Department of Employee Relations. They were encouraged by the encouragement that we might give. You could argue, obviously, that they certainly do have a latitude. We've not taken away any authority to the labor negotiations part. But if we are, as the largest employer in the state, going to model concept of consumer involvement and best practices and all the rest, it seems to me that it makes sense for us to encourage, and I think there's no harm, but there is benefit in order for us to at least provide this much encouragement, and it is supported by the Department of Employee Relations.
Representative Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is an important part to leave in because it gives the employees an opportunity to purchase a different type of health plan. You know, we've talked a lot about having the ability to shop doctors, go find, you know, find your doctor, have more freedoms, things like that. Look at price and quality of health care. The health savings accounts give that plan flexibility to an employee, and I think we would want to have that, and I think it'd be very beneficial. I think it's you know, the federal government is saying that we have to offer, you know, employers have to make available plans and things like that. So this is really, in my mind, more of a compliance issue because our state employees can opt out of the state plan or tell the state to set up HSAs for them. So it's just a matter of a vehicle for the state to do it. So I think it's an important provision to leave in here, members.
Representative Solberg, it says on the line 36, with the exclusive representatives of state employees, the commissioner must propose this. Are you saying that this is already in practice or in law? I'm confused of what you're
Mr.
trying to
Mr. Chairman, say. What I'm saying is there's nothing that precludes the Commissioner Brewer, who is a negotiator for the state contract,
right,
from doing that right now. Yeah, that commissioner, or at the will of the governor, is able to bring all kinds of things to the table, from changing the health care to freezing wages or having employees pay more, whatever. We've never have told, I don't think, in state law what the commissioner, what the governor must bring to the table in negotiations. In my opinion of this, whether it's good or bad, is immaterial. Mm-hmm. It's we're inserting the legislative stance into the bargaining unit. And that should be not what we should be doing. That's the executive branch.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, Representative Solberg, you know, a union employee could come to Dewar right now and say, I want to set up an HSA account and opt out. And those are existing union contracts, which could be affected too, because it's negotiated benefit. And what they're saying here is, you know, we have to offer another option if the employees want it, because under the federal law, the employee is entitled to it if they request it. So I think it's more of a conformance issue, not saying it has to be in the contract. It's just saying that that plan has to be also offered as an option to any union employee or non-union employee who works for state government.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me like it's already available benefit for it. So then why are we negotiating? Why are we telling what the administration must do to negotiate?
Representative Lippman?
I guess to that point, with respect to Representative Solberg, I don't think your separation of powers argument is well taken. We are directing our employee, the commissioner, and it's, you know, he's in the other branch, but he follows directions from the legislature. We make rules all the time to make a presentation so as to get this on the commissioner's radar screen. So this is part of their planning process for negotiations. It doesn't oblige the state employees to take it. It doesn't oblige a particular result of negotiations, so it's not an interference. But we certainly have a right to, I think, set the agenda for executive employees. I think that's clearly within our range of powers, and would urge a no vote on the Solberg Amendment.
Okay, on the Solberg Amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
It does not prevail.
That's probably a division.
Division. On the Solberg Amendment, all in favor raise your hands. Okay, those against?
The doll counts as two.
Okay, I think my ears are good. Okay. Now, back on the bill, the sections that we are talking about. Is there anybody in the audience on those sections that would like to speak for or against the bill? Seeing none, is there anybody else that would like any questions regarding the bill?
And Mr. Chair, this is coming down to GovOps or State Government Finance.
Okay, somebody wants to come down and speak on these provisions that are in the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Kahn.
I just have a question on where the bill goes. I assume it goes to civil law at some point.
That's my understanding. Representative
goes
Bradley.
To civil law after.
Representative Bradley, maybe you want to comment about that.
You know, usually we do things through all the policy committees before it goes to the finance committees and GovOp. So I just want to know what the process
Mr. Chair.
When is it going to civil law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, what we've done in order to be able to run things in parallel, and I've committed to all the committees, and I would commit to you as well publicly, we have a separate bill which represents the section on medical malpractice that is in civil law right now to be heard. And whatever the outcome of that civil law hearing is what will get rejoined to the bill in the final finance committee.
But, Mr. Chair, isn't that still in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it is still in the bill, but as I said, the action coming out of civil law will be the prevailing action, and whatever that is what will ultimately come into the bill.
Well, Representative Kahn. Mr. Chairman, suppose civil law doesn't pass anything out of it, what happens to this bill with the caps? Does this thing go to civil law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, if the civil law does not pass that section will be removed in Health Care Finance Committee.
Okay, sir, welcome to our committee. I see you got a PowerPoint presentation. You have just a few minutes. Now we're dealing with just the the section that's before us, Article 6.
Thank you.
Okay, you have to identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Bill Wenmark. I'm president of our North American Association of Ambulatory Urgent Care. I oversee about 150 million visits a year nationwide, and also have a practice here in Minnesota. It sees about 625 patients a day. Representative Kahn knows I also volunteer at the Lung Association, some other things. And also
you see 625
patients a day, 7 days a week, sir. Yes, absolutely.
And you're here today?
And I'm here. Yeah, I got a great staff. I also began my medical career at the Naval Academy and also volunteered to go to Vietnam as a combat corpsman of the United States Marine Corps, and I'm glad that I'm here to be able to talk to you today.
Wow.
What I want to also do is say that when I came back, I volunteered also to join one of the first HMOs. I was one of the original 12 that started Physicians Health Plan, the National City Bank building in downtown Minneapolis. You maybe have remembered that, mm-hmm. friend. Richard Burke is a name that was certainly around a long time. I have to apologize for what we did. We destroyed the marketplace, and I want to compliment Representative Bradley for bringing up this particular issue and beginning what I would have to support him to say is just a beginning process. There's some more things that need to be done. That HMO history was that we used the Nixon administration wanted to fix the federal cost of health care, and this was an initiative that started in 1971. The study that was done by Mathematica and the RAND Corporation, and it proved that it would not serve seniors and sick people very well, but it sure did good for good, healthy people. We went ahead and took the federal law from 1973 to 1983. I was personally involved in a little deal we had in the sales department. It said 80 to 810. What we needed to do is take the Blue Cross and Blue Shield $80 a month catastrophic stop-loss plan that was sold by to most employers in the state of Minnesota, and we needed to get it to $800 in 10 years. The only way we could afford to pay for the HMO first dollar coverage. We shadow priced the insurance industry for 10 years. Shadow priced them. I always remember over the weekend I was looking at my rate review sheets that I kept. My wife regrets that I keep most of the things historically, but I keep it. We created the mandates also that allowed me to walk into groups and say, oh, by the way, here's a card for everything that you do. No more filling out of the paperwork. just go ahead and use this card as the American Express card of the healthcare systems. The thing I said, though, also was we have a federal law of pre-existing condition limitation. If you're sick or have anything wrong with you, we don't have to do anything about that for a year. That's how we accomplished the shadow pricing. The HMOs, we paid no taxes. We paid no taxes for our business activities in the state of Minnesota. And we're also housed in the health department. So that's why I'm supporting Representative Bradley's move to get that out of the health department. But I also want to support some other things, is correcting the history and moving this into the Commerce Department. Is that I would also like to talk about some other things, you need to talk about some other things about fair treatment and level playing ground. The HMO should pay taxes, and the mandates, I know, Representative Brad, if I'm correct, you're doing a moratorium on them and removing bone marrow as one, correct, if I'm interpreting your bill? I'd like to see that maybe an effort is taken that we look at removing the mandates so that the insurance companies can truly fairly compete with a catastrophic stop-loss plan. Instead of having the mandates, which raise the rates, which aren't really insurable types of events. I'd also like that the market's further regulated by some deregulation, but I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm only talking about, and Representative Bradley's staff member called me today and said, please, don't talk about anything else. So I'm not going to talk about anything else, but Representative Bradley and I...
That's because the committee's only had...
Exactly, I understand. But I wanted also you all to know that coming here with that history of where I came from, and to think you're starting in the right direction, I have to say that I'm not supporting the whole bill, and I hope that we're going to be able to get together, because there are some provisions that are very dangerous to physicians and medical care in Minnesota. So I support it. I hope that you'll look at those provisions. I hope the members have a chance to look at the other provisions of the bill, and I hope you and I maybe and others can work these out, because there are some very, very dangerous things. So I support this part, but not the whole bill.
Thank you. You know, we'll be making quite a few stops on the way. This is just one of many.
Hope so.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience? Yep. On this section of the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Silver.
Generally speaking, with the situation with the malpractice insurance, I mean, I can understand putting the amendment back in, putting bills together into a committee, but I don't think we've ever seen that section continue on from a committee without going, if it's in there, it should go to the committee. If there's a separate bill coming in, that's one thing, and then putting them in afterwards. But I would agree with Representative Kahn that, you know, there's nothing that would prevent that committee from making some changes and then not reflecting those changes in the final bill.
Representative Bradley, comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I mean, I made my commitment, and I stand by certainly my commitment. The language that's in there now is the same language that is in civil law at this point. But as I said, the conclusion of civil law will be the conclusion that will come back to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Silver.
Representative Bradley, it doesn't do any damage into your bill if we took that section out at this particular point, so that this bill would make sure it goes in a clean fashion.
Except for the fact that that's not in the purview of what we're talking about for this committee.
Oh, I understand but we can still make motions.
Representative Kahn.
I think anything that has to do with where bills get re-referred is the preview of any committee, because that's a step that we need to take.
Yeah, but I think that may be fair to say, but I think our history has always been that we have a bill here to discuss why it's before us. And the reason it's before us is because of this section. That's what we're concentrating on. In fact, we even stopped the witness from
Mr. Chair.
His wonderful presentation.
Representative Sober, I think you were referring to Ways and Means. I think that's where it's open season on bills, because that's where it seems to be where a lot of amendments on bills that are going to the floor that either side want to change will put amendments on.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Sober.
No, I'm very serious on this. I think it's done in all kinds of committees. You could have, it doesn't do any damage to the bill, and when the other bill catches up with it in, Finance Committee, whatever it is, after it clears civil law, that'd be the place to add it on as an amendment, it seems to me.
Representative Brad.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, the difficulty would be then that it could appear to the public, because I want to be honest to the public. Right now, that subject is a part of this sort of comprehensive healthcare cost containment, and I don't want to fool anybody that we've re-entered when we come to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee, that we're sort of reopening this issue. That's why I think there's benefit to the public seeing that this is in fact a part of, so long as, of course, it does in fact survive, however it's amended in civil law. So I think there's benefit and honesty to the public to continue to have this be shown.
It would be civil law. It could also be amended again in Health and Human Services Finance, because that would be under their...
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Hours, and then Ways and Means.
Ways and Means as well, Mr. Chair.
Plus the floor.
And plus the floor, Mr. Chair.
Okay. If somebody was going to come and speak.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Or I guess we're afternoon, aren't we?
Good afternoon.
Twyla Bray, Citizens Council on Healthcare.
Okay.
And I'm
Thanks
here.
And welcome to the committee regarding this portion of the bill.
All right. I am here to support this portion of the bill, to say that really it's actually 9 years overdue. And for those of you who have not been in the legislature that long, you perhaps don't remember that in 1993, this provision was put in when ERAPO was put in, the regulated all-payer option system, where if anyone wasn't going to be in one of the HMOs in this state, they would have to join RAPO, which was going to be run by the Department of Health. So it made perfectly good sense to put the regulation of all the HMOs in the Department of Health. What was also put in the Department of Health was the power of the Minnesota Health Department to create practice guidelines called practice parameters. That, as well as RAPO, was taken out and repealed in 1995. It's a very good idea to have the regulation of HMOs in where all the other regulation of insurers is. One of the reasons when we looked at the provider tax several years ago, we found that the Department of Health didn't really have any idea whether or not information on the provider tax, or whether or not the third-party payers are actually paying the provider tax. And now maybe the Department of Commerce will be able to actually do that. The only disconnect that we see is that in divesting the health department of regulation over the HMOs, health department is, in another portion of the bill, getting all the authority and more. That would be Article 2. So that would be our only comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question for Ms. Brace.
Oh, please come back.
Or Representative Bradley. I don't know who exactly, but with regard to this aspect of the bill, or more generally, I suppose, about the bill, I have not really had an opportunity to review the bill in detail or the report of the Durenberger Commission. How do these come together? Is this to the proposals that you have here, and particularly this transfer proposal, does that coincide with the recommendations of that commission?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, on most of the issues in the bill, Senator Durenberg and I have had a lot of correspondence, even post when they made their announcements, and he feels that those consistent. But let me be real honest with you, though. Senator Durenberg has not commented on this specific section. If you look at his bill, his proposals and his report, it is much more about sort of paradigm shifts than it is about specific kinds of things. I don't think you see the kind of specific proposals like these are.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Bridge.
I guess what I would say is that one of the things in the Durenberger report is really to put the consumers in the driver's seat. Yes. And so the health savings account piece in there actually tends to do that. But the other thing that I would say is, and the HMO piece isn't actually even talked about the transfer, the regulation. There are pieces in the bill which deal with less administration, and that was in the Durenberger report. But interestingly enough, when Senator Durenberger came and talked to the legislature and gave his report, one of the things that he said when Representative Abler asked, how do we figure out which medical practices are best? And what he said was, well, first of all, don't put them into law. So that's a difference. That's a difference I see in that Article 2 is putting them into law. And he actually suggested not. It's not really in his paper that I could tell, but that was just a comment from him.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. To that point. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, Representative Bradley, Representative Bedreau, Representative Wilkins, and myself sat down late last summer and started working on this health care bill, even before the Durnberger thing started. We went on the road last fall to all over the state, the four of us, split up and held health care meetings and got input on the bill, listened to what people wanted to see their health care change. And that's what you see before you is the product that of all those meetings and all those ideas were put into this bill to carry forward. And so these are ideas and thoughts from people around the state of Minnesota.
Okay, Representative Stover.
I have an unrelated question, but it was brought up about HMOs not paying taxes. Do nonprofit corporations pay taxes?
Who's our tax person?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think they do.
I thought you wanted
and, to. And I mean, they as a corporation don't pay income tax. I think Blue Cross Blue Shield is a nonprofit organization.
I bet you're right.
Fact is, I recall a conversation I had years ago when Governor Perpich said that the nonprofit corporations should pay the same as let's say the Prudential, the for-profits, and it wanted to impose the same type of tax structure on them, and I think it was a 2% tax that was probably implemented in 1858, I think one of the first taxes the state of Minnesota ever implemented. And Blue Cross Blue Shield sent a little letter to every one of our of their members in our districts and said the governor was imposing a new tax on them, and we got all letters from them. And their CEO retired at the same time, and I remember talking to their lobbyist, which is a good friend, he's no longer living of mine, and I said, you know, as their CEO retired, I think they gave him a new house in Florida as a retirement gift, $400,000 retirement per year bonus. And I said, you know, that's kind of nice for nonprofits to get that kind of.
Not too shabby.
Not too bad, is it? And he said, well, he said, you know, it was kind of bad timing. And I said, maybe it was bad policy.
Boy.
So, you know, HMOs are the only ones that that don't pay taxes, because I think many of the other very large health care are nonprofit as well.
Mr. Chairman, I renew my motion. Okay, Representative Lippman renews the motion. 1681 be recommended pass state government finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. No.
Passes and moves on. Thank you very much. Thank Representative Hackbarth. Anybody want to move Ms. Representative Hackbarth's bill?
I'll move it.
Representative Haas is moving Representative Hackbarth's bill. And where does it go from here?
Mr. Chairman.
Looks like
taxes.
Taxes, okay.
Finance. Environment finance.
Yeah. Oh, environment finance?
Environment finance.
Okay, environment finance. Okay, what's with House File 1166? And why is it here, Mr. I got a feeling it has to do with something with them, but I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair, members, the bill is referred to governmental operations because Article 2, Section 3, creating the Heritage Enhancement Advisory Council, and Article 2, Section 4, creating a Clean Water Council.
Okay. And that's why it's before us.
Correct.
Anybody got any questions on this bill? Representative Kahn, as a co-author.
Well, I'm not sure this was the bill that I originally got on it, but so well. This takes them...
Interesting.
This takes it from existing tax?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, that's correct.
Okay, how are we going to, what and what size hole does that give us in the budget?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, it's $170 million.
Biennial budget?
I believe it's biennial budget.
I assume that's why it's going to the tax committee at some point.
Okay, are we... where do we say that money's coming from?
Representative Hector. Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it actually comes from the one-fourth of 1% of the sales tax receipts.
I know, but I'm interested in the cuts that will have to be made to fill that hole in the budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I believe that what we're talking about right now is possibly putting this effective date out until 2007. That's what we're dealing with right now, and I think that the budget will increase by that time, and that's what we're hoping for, and that there won't have to be cuts to make the accommodations.
Representative Hackbeth, the Clean Waters Council is created in 04, though.
We're talking about extending the date out. We're still dealing with that issue, Mr. Chairman.
So, okay. The Clean Water Council is not existing now. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we also have an amendment, Mr. Chair, that's going to straighten some of that out a little bit.
Okay, that's the A1 amendment.
That's
Does
correct.
Everybody have the A1 amendment?
I'll move that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seifert's moving the A1 amendment. Do you want to explain what we're doing on the A1 amendment, Representative Hackbeth?
Mr. Chairman, it does extend the date out, and do I have the amendment here?
It adds words forestry in there?
Yeah, we add forestry into the council, just being part of the council, and we also take the date from November 15th, 2004 to January 5th, 2005, and this will have to be dealt with at this point with the dates that we have in here. In the next biennium, we'll have to adjust for it in that budget unless we make further date changes.
Okay.
But most of the amendment includes forestry and being on the Heritage Enhancement Council.
On the A1 amendment, does anybody have any questions on that? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A1 amendment's adopted. Back on the bill. Anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against this bill? Anybody?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have quite a number of people in the audience that would like to speak in favor of the bill if
you
need them to come forward.
Well, I'm talking about this section, though. I'm talking limited to the, is there anybody on the, regarding the Clean Waters Council membership? Hi, welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lance Ness. I am the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, and we do support the bill and the council for the Heritage Enhancement Council.
Okay. Any questions? Yeah, Representative Nubb.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ness or Representative Hackbeth. This is the first time I've seen the bill this year, and I guess I don't remember seeing it in past years on the committees I was on. Why is this council set up? Why aren't you using, say, the LCMR as your or their citizen committee instead of setting up a new council like this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vanapa, this came about 8 years ago. We discussed this. This is modeled after the Missouri proposition. They have a very similar council, and their council is separate from any other entity. And so that's where this was driven from. It's a similar method. Their council is much smaller. They elect or actually appoint the Commissioner of Natural Resources. We didn't want to get that far into it. We just wanted to make sure that the project money was going as best as we could determine from the constituent level to the areas it was most affected and needed.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ness, do they have any sort of a lottery or trust fund or LCMR-like organization in Missouri?
I am not aware that they have any type of LCMR type of organization. I'm not sure what they do with their lottery money. What they did in their state, they added 1/8 of 1% to their state sales tax, and then that was constitutionally dedicated to this committee called the Department of Conservation.
Thank you.
Are you thinking that do we need to have this and the other? Is that what are they the separate functions type of thing?
Mr. Chairman, just asking questions.
Okay.
Mr.
First
Chairman?
My interest, that's why. Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could ask a somewhat general question. Representative Hackbeth, I think one problem with bills of this nature is that if you have a dedicated fund that's going to provide $170 million, for these purposes, is there any guarantee in the bill that it won't just result in a $170 million reduction of the budgets in the state agencies that are already responsible for things in this area?
Representative Hackbeth?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, we do have a section in the very first section of the bill, section 15, the money dedicated under this section shall be appropriated by law and shall not be used as a substitute for our traditional funding sources.
No. So we try to address the issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, how would you guarantee that? How would you even know, you know, if an agency just submitted a budget that was lower than it had been in the previous year? You'd probably say, "Oh, that's a good thing." How would you know that that was occurring? How would this help prevent that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I'm not sure that would prevent it. It's a budget process that we go through every year. I mean, we put it in statute. That's about all we can do. I don't know what more we can do than that.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Rhodes. I did make a visit to Missouri a year or so ago, and I did discuss with their conservation department their plan and their use of the Heritage Council as they have it. And I'm so glad to see this back in the bill, Representative Hackbarth, because that really, I think, puts the decision-making in the hands of representative group of our constituency. So thanks for doing that.
Okay, Representative Khan, question.
Yes, I'm trying to figure out, which I guess is the purview of this committee, the various councils and the membership of the councils.
Yep.
For example, I gather that that we're still spending a certain proportion on parks and trails and things like that. Who makes the determination of that spending?
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, we do not have a council for the parks and the trails and those issues. That's not part of the bill. I guess the departments, the divisions of the department will be making those decisions.
So the Heritage Enhancement Council is only dealing, is specifically limited to the proportion that deals with hunting and fishing and wildlife expenses.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And the Clean Water Council is specifically, was any of these in the original bill? Were these things in the original bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, the Heritage Enhancement Council was in the original bill. The Clean Water Council is taken right from the G16 proposal that was submitted to the governor. We take that council right from that Clean Water, the Impaired Waters Program, the plan that came forward from that council or that task force. We put that in the bill. It's exactly the same as what the G16 came up with for a plan.
Okay. And just to get this straight, the original version of 1166 was written with an addition to the sales tax as opposed to using a part of the sales. Okay, what
Mr. changed? Chairman, Representative Khan, that's correct.
What changed the mind of the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, over in the Senate, Senator Sams is carrying the companion to this bill. His original amendment changed it from adding a sales tax of 0.25% to taking it from existing funds. We wanted to get in line with that, try to make it as similar as possible with the Senate bill.
That's kind of, Mr. Chairman, that's kind of a big change, particularly for the fact that the other one asks the voters, I think, a reasonable question. The first version of the bill asks the voters a reasonable question, i.e., you really like this stuff and you want money spent on it. Are you willing to tax yourself some more to spend it? This version of the bill says we're just going to take it away from other parts of government to spend it on what you want. I don't have the amendment prepared now, but I'd certainly like to put an amendment saying that no money shall be taken away from K-12 education, early childhood education, higher education, or health and human services. In order, once this constitutional dedication goes through, how do you explain that? A change, we did it because that's the way the Senate did it, doesn't mean a lot to me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, the very first bill that was moving forward on this was a 316s bill, and that took it from existing funds also.
Well, okay. Representative Oh, Representative Haas, I guess you can renew your motion.
That's what I was just going to do, Mr. Chair. I'll renew my motion.
To the the Environmental Finance Committee.
Right.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chairman.
Biskins. Thank you. House File 1821.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Ben, you have witnesses, I know. We want to get you today.
Okay.
If we can get this out, and if this should be just a two-minute deal. For everybody would be. I know you have witnesses. Okay, I'll move House File 1821, Representative Biskins, and where does it go?
I believe the House floor, Mr. Chair.
I didn't hear you. Where?
I believe
House floor?
Yep.
Okay, to the House floor. What does the bill, I assume it's because State Board of Investment, that's why it's here. What are you doing?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Mr. Chairman and members, a brief explanation. What this bill seeks to do is to allow the Met Council to work with the State Board of Investment to invest their post-retirement funds. Metropolitan Council feels that this investing of the funds in a larger investment pool with more expertise would help their employees can realize higher rates of return. The State Board of Investment has approved this proposal, and the bill language was drafted with assistance from the State Attorney General assigned to the State Board of Investment. Mr. Chair and members, there is Ms. Mary Bogie from the Metropolitan Council here to answer any questions if you have them. Also, I believe Mr. Howard Bicker from the State Board of Investment was supposed to be here to nod yes that they think that they're fine with this.
I noticed that it's on the consent calendar for the Senate. So
yes, it is on consent calendar.
Perhaps maybe we should just put it on the consent calendar for the House.
Mr. Chair,
this seems to deal with the pensions. Isn't this the funds that we're talking about investing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, yes, it is their post-retirement funds.
We have a general policy that I don't know that we've ever not done, that anything that deals with pensions goes through the Pensions Commission. Why hasn't this gone through the Pensions Commission?
Aha, here comes our answer. Welcome to the committee. You can sit down and talk to us. We love hearing from you anyway. Our former committee administrator. You have to identify yourself.
Representative Kahn.
Tell everybody who you are.
I'm Judge Shedden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council and former staff to this committee with Chairman Rhodes. So. Nice to be back. In regards to your question, it's not pensions, it's a health care benefits.
Got it.
Okay. Is there any reason why this can't go on the consent agenda? Representative Hilty, you have a problem?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a reason it can't go on the consent agenda, but I do have a question.
Go ahead.
The reference to Chapter 118A.
Yeah.
That this is notwithstanding? What are we notwithstanding here?
Mr. Shepard, what are we notwithstanding?
Mr. Chair and members, Chapter 118A is the general laws that govern depository institutions and investments by local units of government, and I'm assuming the State Board of Investment probably isn't listed there, and so this bill would say notwithstanding the fact that they're not there, that they could invest the money with the State Board.
Okay. Any other discussion? Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against it? Seeing not, remove my motion. In fact, I'll change my motion that House File 1820 be recommended to pass on the consent calendar. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Bad. Thank you. It passes.
Thank you.
Representative Thiessen, and you have some witnesses. Where does your bill go, Representative Thiessen?
This is...
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't come to our committee first?
I don't think there's any money involved.
So you're moving 2096 to capital investment, correct?
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And welcome, folks. I promised him we'd get it in today, and you're doing just fine, so we want to hear from you. You're going to have to explain what this bill does because I can't quite figure it out myself here.
Well, and I will give a brief, but let them explain with a little more practical purpose. Under current law...
By the way, there's an amendment. Do you want to put that on?
Oh, yes.
Okay, you're moving the A1 amendment?
Yeah, why don't I...
you want to explain first?
Why don't I explain the bill?
Okay,
and then
go ahead.
Under current law, when property is acquired with state bonds or improved with state bonds, there's a division of And then the properties later sold, there's a in statute a division of the way that those proceeds of the sale are allocated. And basically how it works, at first you repay the bond proceeds. So it kind of, you know, if you've got $10,000, you repay that to the state. And then you pay off any other debts on the property, private debt. And then the excess, so any profit that you make, is divided between the people that own the property and the state in proportion to kind of your contribution to acquiring the property. And what this bill does is, I think, correct kind of an unfairness in that law in circumstances when you've when the person who owns the property acquired it a long time ago, so they purchased it for a very, you know, a relatively small amount of money, and then you have inflation and increased values, and then the state comes in and provides their portion for improvement. The state's proportion looks disproportionately larger than it is when you divide up the proceeds subsequently. So all this bill is saying is, we're gonna talk about dividing up the proceeds of any profits that you might get, we're going to look at the value of the state's investment at the same, and then the value of the local government or whoever else is getting the money. It usually would be a local government investment at the time the state makes their investment, instead of the time it was acquired. So you kind of have a more fair and equitable distribution of those proceeds. I think it's easier explained if I just let these folks explain their particular situation, and that will give a little more.
Hi, welcome to our committee. You have to identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Todd Nolenberger. I'm a member of the Richfield Board of Education.
Dr. Barbara Devlin, superintendent of the Richfield Schools.
Oh, welcome. And?
I'm David Butler. I'm the secretary of the Richfield Historical Society.
Welcome, all of you. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify before the House Government Operations Committee concerning House File 2096, which would clarify the division of proceeds upon the sale of state bond finance property. The Richfield School District's interest in this statute stems from our ownership of the Riley Bartholomew House, which is the oldest home in Richfield and is recognized as an historic site by the Minnesota Historical Society. Both current and former school boards have supported efforts of the Richfield Historical Society to preserve the Bartholomew House, as illustrated by the following three-part motion enacted by the Richfield Board of Education on January 20th of 2004. We affirm the efforts of the Richfield Historical Society to preserve the Riley Bartholomew House as an historical site. We grant permission to the Richfield Historical Society to renovate the building adjacent to the Bartholomew House for the purpose of creating a history center that includes programs and activities designed to enrich and support the educational program of the school district. And we confirm that, in recognition of the significance of the Bartholomew House as an historic site and the long-term value of the Bartholomew House and history center as an educational resource, the school board has no intention or plans to dispose of the Bartholomew House property or to use it for another purpose. However, because of concerns relating to Minnesota Statutes 16A 695, the Board of Education tabled action on a two-part motion to accept a Minnesota Historical Society grant of $12,100 on behalf of the Richfield Historical Society, and approve the declaration restricting the sale or disposal of 14,561 square feet of property lying east of Lindale Avenue South and south of 69th Street, which is currently leased to the Richfield Historical Society. If the school district accepts the state grant, the property will become state bond financed property, subject to the requirements of Minnesota Statutes 16A 695, for as long as the 20-year state bond funds remain outstanding. The school board's action to table followed an analysis by legal counsel of the impact of Minnesota Statute 16A 695 as currently written, which would base a determination of the relative contributions of the state, the historical society, and the school district on contributions made at widely varying points in time, going back to the original purchase of the property in 1965. The Richfield Board of Education supports House File 2096 because it would change the basis upon which the shared contributions to the improvement of a property would be calculated. As amended, the contributions of all parties would be based on the appreciated value of the property at the time the grant is made, rather than at variable points in time. The school board appreciates your consideration of House File 2096 and urges its passage. I would just like to add that we're not asking for any money here. We're just asking for the rules related to this to be changed. And for purposes of perspective here, we want to kind of point out that it doesn't seem fair that we would enter a partnership with the state based on our historic value versus the state's current contribution. If somebody came to me and asked to partner up with me on a house I bought in 1965 for $20,000, they were willing to pony up $20,000 and wanted to go 50-50, I wouldn't be interested. Thank you.
Are you sure?
So, can I move the amendment, Mr.
Yes,
Chair? And
sir.
And the amendment it's more of an editorial change than a change to the substance of what's actually proposed in the bill. And it was developed in consultation with Mr. Selson from the Department of Finance, who oversees this. And I think it just clarifies more what we're trying to accomplish.
On the A1 amendment, any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. All right, the amendment's on. Superintendent, would you like to say anything? You don't have to, just don't want to. But
the only thing I would say is that we, in addition to the actual testimony, we did a comparative analysis of what the impact would be if we did end up having to sell that property, what the impact would be under current law versus how it would be treated under the proposed amendment.
Okay. Any other questions? Anybody in the audience would like to speak for or against this bill? Any other comments? Representative Thiessen? Yes, Representative Huss.
Representative Thiessen, is this the one that's right on Lindale that Richfield High uses as athletic fields and stuff like that?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Do we
they have
any
great plans for it.
Do we have any alma mater of Richfield High School here? I guess that's the first question. I guess
that's where I had my physical education class.
Is that right?
Right after they bought it. Yep. I just wonder if they're still using it.
Any other comments from the Historical Society? Anybody else? Seeing none, renew your motion.
I'll renew my motion.
As amended, House File Number 2096 be recommended to pass to capital investment.
Yes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
Thank you.
Prevails. We have some minutes. Representative Lippman moves the minutes of February 25th. Any corrections or additions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed.
Minutes are adopted. And Mr. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I just precluded your making the announcement, but I was wondering if you had contemplated any additional meetings.
Yep.
Of the
Yes, Friday.
Go ahead. Oh, you're so shy. Okay. Wednesday at 12:30. Friday 2 to 5. In room 5. Room 5 of the Capitol. Oh, room 5 here. Okay. So we're meeting Friday 2 to 5 and Wednesday 12:30 to whatever, till session starts. Then we go in the house.
Session on
Wednesday. So session on Wednesday as well. Is that okay?
Yeah, so we'll meet after session on Wednesday.
If we don't get our calendar completed.
We got tons
of referrals. That's our problem. Plus the other bills we want to get up.
Well, Mr. Chair, session's at noon on
Wednesday.
Which will just passing bills.
Okay, I'll say it's 12:30 or right after session. That's what, yeah.
And we have state government
Meeting adjourned.